Well, I'd first like to welcome all those joining us across the city, different campuses, locations here around Atlanta, across the country, around the world. It's awesome to be joined up with so many different people today as we're really starting something new and we're headed into a new season. Last week, we finished up a series, but we launched a brand new season, this Deeper, Wider season, and it's really created a lot of positive energy and momentum in our churches and our organization, with our and our network of churches, amongst our staff. And I want to talk a little bit about it, because I was having a conversation with a friend of mine not long ago after one of our vision gatherings, and he was telling me a story about a conversation with his friend, but it was sort of revealing. At first, I didn't know where the story was going, because he told me, you know, since the pandemic, he's had this friend for a long time, but since the pandemic, he's been talking to his friend, who lives in a different city, by the way. So he has this friend. They're both business leaders. They do some work together, but they've been longtime friends. They're both involved in their churches and really heavily involved, feel called in the marketplace, but really involved in their churches. And they compare notes and stories all the time, and both are part of really thriving communities of faith. And he started telling his friend recently that, you know, he's felt a little tension related to his church. And he's telling me this after this gathering. I was like, oh gosh, what is this all about? He's like, you know, and again, this guy's been involved in our churches for a long time, multiple campuses. And he said, yeah, I just feel like since the pandemic, and look, I got lots of grace, lots of things have changed, but it just feels like since the pandemic, you know, we've been coasting. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, it's just how I've been feeling. And he said, when I told my friend that, he said, you know, if you're coasting, you're going downhill. Which maybe we could just stop the message right there and then we could all go home. I was like, that is so good. It's so true too. Cause if you're coasting, you're not going uphill. You're not building anything. You're not climbing anything. You're not heading anywhere great. You're coasting. You're either about to come to a stop or you're going downhill. And he said, but here's the thing I want you to know. I'm so excited about this Deeper, Wider thing, because this is anything but coasting. And I'm excited about this. And you know, I've heard this several times from different people that they're more excited than ever. And it just got me thinking, this is a really important idea. And many of the testimonials from our vision nights were just that, you know, the people are excited. And I've had people tell me, hey, this is not only inspiring for me as a part of this church, it's inspiring for me personally. Now, I just quick caveat, I'm aware not everybody's as excited about things. Some of you are newer. Some of you have questions. That's all fine. But here, and I'm going to come back to the reasons for that in a few minutes. But beyond this initiative, it got me thinking about, we had this one open week. Next week, we're starting something new. Andy's going to be back. We're starting to turn our attention towards Easter, and we're doing a series that's going to ramp up towards Easter. But we had this open slot, and I wanted to talk a little bit about vision specifically. And I'm going to start with some of the organizational stuff, but I want to talk specifically about the importance of vision. This is not just a organizational idea or something that has to do with campaigns or initiatives. This is a biblical idea. But before we get to that, because we're gonna talk about that in a minute, I've also discovered psychologically, there's a lot of positive implications for both individuals and organizations. As a matter of fact, I've told some of you before about, I was in a turnaround situation, a very difficult situation at a previous church, and I was meeting with a therapist, and my therapist was like, I've taken you as far as I can, which is never what you want to hear from your counselor, like, you need more help. And I was like, okay, you need a second counselor. She referred me to an organizational psychologist. It was like, hey, this person can help you on the leadership side of things. And I was like, okay, great. So I meet with this guy, and I'll never forget this. He begins talking to me about the positive implications of clear vision. And some of this will be review for some of you, but there's all sorts of positive implications for having clarity of vision. And this is true organizationally and personally. And the first of which is that, and this is probably the most obvious one, it provides direction. Clear vision provides direction in our lives. And this is true for us organizationally, but it does that because it specifies a goal, which we all need personally as well. And in fact, psychologically, this is what this guy began to describe to me. This more than anything else triggers hope and enthusiasm and joy, positive momentum, because we're wired for progress. People are wired for progress. And the situation I was in, there had been decline. There was question about what's going on. Where are we going? What's the vision? What's the direction we're going in? And he's saying, look, the more you can create clarity of direction, it actually... So you not only point in a direction, specifies a specific goal, as you make progress, even small steps towards that goal, he said, and this is something I never knew, it actually indexes that progress in your brain. allowing for a sort of on-demand recall of that positive emotion. And so it's so important when you're pointing at something, then to also realize or remember, and this is good personally and practically for you as you're making progress towards the goal, to remember and to celebrate and think back on the progress you've made, because it's so easy to go, well, I'm not there yet, or I'm never going to get there. But when you begin to look at that progress, that indexes in your brain. And this is just a human thing. And it creates positive emotion and momentum in that direction. The second thing he said is it provides focus, which is another thing we all need. And it makes sense when you create a clear and compelling vision, it creates focus because humans are remarkable. In fact, Homo sapiens are the only living things, the only species with the ability to imagine what isn't. This is what imagination is. We imagine unreality and we bring it into reality. That's how invention happens, is you imagine something that could be, that isn't yet. I mean, this is what the Wright brothers did, and you bring it into reality, what isn't, but what could be, and then we work together to bring it into reality. This vision, it does something really important. It limits that imagination in a really helpful way. It focuses it on the direction that we're headed or on the desired destination. And when we get focused on a clear vision, what it does is it harnesses all our best thoughts and ideas and creativity towards the realization of that vision. And then the last thing is it creates alignment. And again, we mostly think about this when it comes to organizations or groups, but this is true personally too. Most people naturally desire freedom. We want to do whatever we want, whenever we want. And this is about dreaming and imagination and creativity, but it's also about our feelings. And what happens is clear direction provides the structure necessary to unify all of the accessible resources in our lives or in your organization and leverage them for maximum amount of progress towards the clarity of the vision that you're going for. Now, here's the thing. This is all true, but there's a shadow side to this as well. And while we all know this, it's not as obvious, because the shadow side of this, when there's a lack of vision, is that while there's all these positives to clarity of vision, when there's a lack of vision, we suffer the consequences. And there's several. The first of which is that we become aimless, or people become aimless, or organizations become aimless. And sometimes that looks like wandering in circles. In fact, in just a few minutes, we're going to look at one of the really famous biblical stories of the nation of Israel when they were wandering aimlessly. And they're sort of wandering in circles, but it doesn't always look like that. It can be more subtle. Sometimes it looks like drifting. We were intended to aim our lives or head in a certain direction, or we had a vision for what the future would look like, either for our lives or for our marriage or for our family or for our business or for our financial future. And what's happened is we've begun to drift. Something else got our attention. We lost focus. We lost the direction that we were once heading in. And we've at least stopped rowing in that direction. And we've started going with the flow. And we're no longer actually going in the direction that we intended to go to. And when we become aimless, the thing that follows right closely behind, and we're experiencing a ton of this in our world right now, is we become anxious. In fact, a lack of clear vision is one of the leading causes clinically for anxiety. And you're anxious when you have no focus because you don't know what to do, you feel paralyzed. But more so in our world, and psychologists are discovering this more and more, more often than not, the problem is not that we don't have any direction. It's that there's too many possibilities for direction. There's too many different things to focus on. There's too many different things that too many different directions you could go in, because we're constantly scrolling and we discover all the things we could be doing or all the things that we're not doing and all the places we could go and all the things that we don't have that we want to have that we think we could have. And not only that, all the things that are happening in the world that aren't good in the world. And instead of staying focused on something that focuses our attention and reduces that anxiety, because we're like, I don't know where I'm going, I don't know what I'm doing, I feel fragmented. What we do, that comes from imagining all the possibilities of what could go wrong. Instead of focusing your mind and your attention on that one desired possible outcome that was the clear vision that you were headed towards in your life. Dan Zadra, he has this phrase that he says, and I love this, because anxiety stems from worry. It starts as worry, but worry is actually a misuse of the imagination. See, your imagination, you weren't given your imagination. In fact, over and over in the scriptures, we're told to fear not, to not to worry. But the truth is our imagination can think up all of the things that could go wrong. But when we reduce the possibilities of outcome and you get focused on a clear vision, it actually reduces that anxiety in your life. And it manages other negative emotions, because what it does is it actually reduces and manages cortisol levels in your body, which reduces stress in you. And so this is critical, not misuse this imagination that God's given you. Clear vision and focus is critical. The third thing is that it provides division, or we become divided. And I probably don't have to spend too much time on this, because this is easy, but without clear vision, directing the way, we leave it up to everyone or anyone to capture our attention or to lead us in the direction they want to go, in many different directions. And we all do that. And when you got people going in different directions, there's division. And this happens within companies, within marriages, within families. This happens all over the place. And without clear vision, we not only, again, miss out on all the positives that clear vision creates, we open ourselves up to the consequences. And here's the wild thing is, this isn't new. Like there's a lot of keying in on this. This is very in the news and pop psych culture right now. And the reality is we're learning a lot about it, because we're learning a lot more, because we're learning from neuroscience, some new innovations we've never heard before. But Solomon said this in the mid 10th century BC. We have his diary. We have his journal. He's an accomplished leader and king. And this is what he said. And maybe you've heard this before. This is the old King James version. Where there is no vision, the people perish. Or maybe your translation says, where there is no vision, people die. And some of you thought about that and you thought, that's a strange thought. Like, when there's no vision, people, how do they die? Like, what happens to them? And this is truthfully one of the most misunderstood and probably overused scriptures. You probably heard this before and you maybe didn't even know it came from the Bible. But what this means is, where there's no vision, this word perish, para, it literally means to cast off restraint. And you think about this. This is what Solomon was saying. This makes sense in context. When you understand this specific Hebrew word, and I'm not sure why it got translated this way, but it means to cast off restraint, or how things get out of control, or things run wild, or things come unraveled. And That's coming, again, from an incredibly wise and accomplished leader. And if you're an organizational leader, you know this is exactly what happens. Because when there's no clear vision, people drift aimlessly. It leads to decline. It ultimately leads to failure of systems and organizations and plans and teams. Without clear direction, people wander in different directions. And they begin to choose to row in their own direction. And most often, that's in the wrong direction. And all sorts of things, sometimes everything, falls apart when you don't have clear vision. Now, this is what I want to talk about for the rest of our time today. Many, if not most people, do not have a clear vision for their own life. Like, you're following somebody else's vision, maybe in a company or in an organization, or maybe some community leader or something that you're a part of, or maybe even this church. But what about you? Like, what's your vision for your life and for your marriage and your family and where you're headed 5 years or 10 years from now? And here's the thing. This isn't just in the world out there. That's in the world. It's in the church, and more so in the world today. As a result of all the things we've experienced recently, as a result of all the possibilities that are out there, as a result of all the innovation, I mean, the truth is, as many psychologists have said, we're not built to bear all of the innovation that we have at our fingertips. And as a result, we, particularly in America, we're more aimless and anxious and divided than we ever have been. I mean, you see it everywhere. I don't have to convince you. I mean, more than ever, people lack clear direction in their lives. And they're about one thing one day and about something else the next day. And we wander and we scroll and we go with the flow and we follow the culture and we end up somewhere. But it's not because we were aiming our life in that direction. It's not because we were intentional about where we were headed. And the truth is, and some of you know this, this is true of us individually, but it's had a collective impact. In fact, the aim of our historically moral conscious as a nation is dissipating. And the truth is it's has far less to do with who's in control politically than we want to accept or admit. We want to blame somebody else. We want it to be somebody else's job. We want it to be about legislation, but it's not about that. It's actually about a shift in our world that has moved. And this is, again, any sociologist and psychologist will tell you this. There's been a massive shift in the last half of century in our world from an external locus of authority to an internal locus of authority. This has happened in terms of generations. It's happened over time, but there's been a massive shift from trusting external sources as an authority to becoming our own internal source. And it shifts and it changes with how we feel day to day, which is why we're so anxious. Because life, as our feelings go, so go our lives. We are not telling ourselves how we ought to feel. We're allowing our feelings to tell us how things are going. And life and anxiety and depression that are closely related, they're at an all-time high. I was recently listening to a podcast with a leading neurologist. And he was quoting all this data, and I had to go back and listen to it again. I was almost in disbelief. And one of the things he was talking about is that we've had a 63% increase since the pandemic in anxiety and depression. Since the pandemic, which was already at an all-time high. We've had a 63% increase. Last year, 337 million people were written prescriptions for anxiety or depression. 27%, this is the one that got me, 27% of all doctor visits, more than one in four, of all doctor visits of all types led to prescriptions for benzodiazepines, which is Xanax or Valium or Ativan. Now, I'll just say this. If you're taking one of those medications, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying that you're in the wrong. I'm not saying there's any, you know, there's something wrong with you or there's an issue. What I'm saying is we're treating the symptoms and it's growing and it's increasing because we're not actually addressing the core issue. And I'm not even going to try to waste my time trying to convince you how divided we are. The evidence for that is beyond obvious, politically and socially and marrowly. The division in our world is well documented, but not as obvious and more important to what I want to talk about today. Not as obvious, however, is the impact of the extreme events we've experienced in the last 10 years or so on the internal state of individuals, on your soul. More people are conflicted and confused and divided within themselves about who or what they can trust for truth, who or what they can trust to give direction to them in their lives. And so what happens is as a people, we become more aimless and anxious and divided than ever. And it shows up most because at some point for all of us, we encounter something. Life doesn't go as planned. And when life didn't go as planned, you started to be like, uh-oh, I didn't see this coming. And I don't know where to go from here. I didn't intend to end up here. I didn't see this coming. Maybe your career hasn't gone as planned. Maybe a relationship or a marriage took a turn you didn't see coming. Your financial plan hasn't panned out and you're in unfamiliar territory and some of you have ended so far off course from where you hoped or you intended that you'd be that you're not sure there's anywhere back from where you are. You're not sure how to get back on course. Some of you have lost sight of your vision, a vision you once had for your life that you would say was a mooring for you. It was definitely like a lighthouse. It was directing you in your life. And it's partly because you may have experienced a set of unexpected or traumatic circumstances in your life that derailed you, that hijacked you from your focus, from where you were aiming your life. Life did not go as planned. And now there's no plan. All the plans went out the window. And we get tossed and shifted by the waves and we're drifting and we're headed in different directions and we're more aimless and anxious and divided than ever. And here's what I discovered. I discovered in nearly three decades of leadership and now adulting for a long time that my youth pastor was right. He tried to tell me this when I was growing up. Now, he wasn't right about a lot of things. I will just say that. But he was right about this. This is what he said. He said, if you aim at nothing, you will hit it every time. So profound, isn't it? If you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. I got it. He was right. Now I'm as an adult, I realize it all along the way. By the way, he also taught me things like it's okay to cheat if you win. A good motto to live by is if it's for free, it's for me. He got me to jump off 50-foot cliffs and broke into my house in the middle of the night, dressed up as a gorilla to terrorize me on my birthday. So all sorts of things. Same guy. But I found out he was actually quoting Zig Ziglar. So we're going to go with Zig Ziglar instead of my youth pastor. By the way, he's leads our adult groups up at North Point now. So amazing. We've both come a long way in 3 or 4 decades. So I was probably a good candidate for all the things that he led me into before. But here's the thing he was right about. And you know this. When you're aimed at nothing, that's what you get. When you're aimless, you just wander and you don't end up anywhere on purpose. And amazingly, the people of Israel, they found themselves in this exact spot. Things did not go as planned. And they were literally wandering. They were aimless and anxious and divided. And I don't have time to give you the whole story, but you should read about it. Moses had led the people out of slavery. God rescued them out of slavery. And then they were on this quest towards this promised land of God. God promised this land, and he described it as flowing with milk and honey. And the whole idea was, this land I'm going to lead you to, it's fruitful. It's going to be amazing for you. You're my people. I'm going to deliver you to a territory. I'm creating a new nation, and I'm going to deliver you to a territory that's your own. And I'm going to help you thrive in this place. And if you'll trust me, I'll guide you there. And after several delays and detours where they didn't trust him, they finally come up to the edge of the promised land. Some of you know the story. And they go in to scope it out, because that's what you do. You're going to go in, if you're going to take this land, there's people in there. We got to figure out who's in there. God says he's going to deliver us this land. We got to go in and see what it's like in there. So 12 spies, they send 12 spies in for 40 days. And they tour around the land. They scope out the whole land. And they come back. And Moses says, so tell me, what was it like? And they were like, it's exactly as God said. It's flowing with milk and honey. It's amazing. It's an amazing land. But there's giants there. Like, these people are giants, and they're weaponized, and they have huge armies, and there's no way. There's no way we can take over these people. 10 of the spies were like, they convinced all the people we should not go into the land. But there were 2, Joshua and Caleb, who said, no, it is as God said. But God also said, he told us what it was going to be like, and he also told us he would deliver it into our hands. Why wouldn't we trust him? I mean, this place is amazing. We've seen it. We're telling you. We should go in and take the land and trust God to take the land. But the fear of the 10 trumped the faith of the 2. And Israel didn't enter the land. And as a result, they wandered for another 40 years in the wilderness. Anxious, aimless, and divided. Until Moses is about to die. He knows it. And he goes to Joshua and says, God's chosen you to lead the nation. And not only is Moses dying, a whole generation of people with him. And he said, my generation, we're not going to get to enter the promised land, but you need to trust God to lead people in the promised land. So Moses dies. Imagine this. And Joshua, he's this leader. 40 years earlier, he was one of the spies, young spies that went in to spy out the land. And God speaks to Joshua. And this is what he says. He says, I promise you what I promised Moses. Moses didn't realize the vision of what I promised him, but I'm promising you the same thing I promised Moses. Wherever you set your foot, you will be on land I have given you. Now look at this vision. From the Negev wilderness in the south, he's given him borders, to the Lebanon mountains in the north, to the Euphrates River in the east, to the Mediterranean Sea in the west, including all the land of the Hittites. This is what I've promised you. This is what I've promised the people of Israel. This is God saying, hey, I'm showing you the borders. I'm giving you a vision. This is the land I'm giving to you. This is the preferred future I have for you. I don't want you to wander in the wilderness. This isn't my will for my people. And Joshua knew this land well. He had spent 40 years touring the land. He knew it was desirable. And God is again promising, if you'll trust me, I'll lead you into it. So Joshua, he's trying to latch onto this vision. And some of us, we've talked about some of this stuff before. So for some of you, this might be review. But there's 3 primary elements to vision. When you're trying to figure out a vision for your life or a vision for anything else. And I learned this from Andy Stanley. He's not looking for me to plug his book. In fact, I don't even think he knew I was going to talk about this today. He wrote a book called Visioneering. And in Visioneering, he said that vision always starts as a solution to a problem. And the problem is what is. And some of you are going, I don't have vision. I'm not a vision person. I don't have a vision for my life. Let me ask you a question. Anybody have any problems? Here's the good news. If you have problems, you're a candidate for vision. because vision begins as a solution to a problem. And it doesn't stop with the problem. It moves on to the possibility. Oh, wrong color. Messed that up. Don't do that often. It moves on to a possibility. The possibility is what could be. The problem is what is. And this is where Joshua is. He knows what could be. He's seen it. The problem is the people have been wandering in the wilderness. What could be is they could be enjoying this land that's flowing with milk and honey. God's promised them a thriving future. It's theirs to take hold of. And it's not only something that could be. He has a passion for this because it's not only something that could be, but it's something that should be. And this is the three elements of vision. The truth is vision is a problem, the possibility of what could be, and the passion for what should be. This is where vision is. This is where vision comes from. And so when you're trying to discover in your life, what's God calling me to? What's God calling, leading me to? Joshua knew that they couldn't stay in the desert. A whole generation had already been lost. And he had seen the land and God had promised. And he said, I'm promising you the same thing that I promised Moses. And Joshua's, he's got, not only, he doesn't want to die in the desert. And he knows what's possible. And he sees a solution to the problem. So, I love this. This is what Joshua does. He takes action. And Joshua, he then commands the officers of Israel, go through the camp and tell the people to get their provisions ready. He starts with, hey, listen. He after casting vision and telling them that what the land was like, reminding them this land flowing with milk and honey, that God had provided, promised them this land a long time ago, and that their forefathers, their fathers, their parents and grandparents had missed out on it. We're not going to miss out on this. You need to get ready. Get your provisions ready. Here's why. In 3 days, I love how specific. In 3 days, you will cross the Jordan River and take possession of the land the Lord God is giving you. In 3 days, we're going to cross the Jordan together and we're going to go in and take the land. Joshua takes aim. He sees the vision of what could be and what should be, and it's a solution to what is. And talk about clarity. He says, get ready. In 3 days, we're going to cross the Jordan River. Here's where we're going, and here's what we're going to do. Get ready. We're crossing the Jordan River. Now, he doesn't lay out the whole battle plan. And here's why. You should go read the story. You should read your Bible. It's fascinating. The battle plan is strange, to put it mildly. It's a strange plan. And they don't know how it's all going to work out. But Joshua's smart enough. He doesn't lay out the whole plan to begin with. He takes aim. And with each step of progress along the way, momentum builds. He just starts with, get ready. We're going to cross the Jordan. That's the first thing we're going to do. And eventually, the people begin to go in that direction. And I don't want to spoil it for you, but when they get to the Jordan River, when they cross the Jordan River, something miraculous happens. They've started marching in the direction of the vision that God's given them for their lives. And God shows up, because that's what God always does. And he makes provision, and they become emboldened. And they start to march boldly towards Jericho. And the border city falls, literally. And they take the border city and eventually go in and take possession of all the land that God promised to them. And from the south, where the Negev Desert is, or wilderness is, to the north where the Lebanon Mountains are, from the Euphrates River over to the Mediterranean Sea, which is today modern day Israel. They took possession of the land that God promised them because they took the first steps towards the vision that God was leading in. God met them in there. Here's a couple questions. Like, I just want you to begin thinking about this. I know this is big and it feels a little ethereal, so I want to make it super practical. First question is, where are you aiming? Where are you aiming your life? Like, what are you about? What are you, what, if somebody were to say, hey, I'm gonna look at your life. I'm gonna look at your day. I'm gonna look at all the things that you're involved with. Here's what you're about. What are you aiming at? And if you're not aiming at something, you're probably coasting. You may be drifting. And as I said earlier, if you're coasting, you may not realize it, but you're going downhill. And before long, things are not going to be going well in certain areas. I mean, one of the ways to think about this is what's the problem you're trying to solve in your life? What's the thing that's got your attention right now that's really important? Like, and is it the right problem that's worthy of your life? Is it worthy of your time? And this is not about, you know, where you live or what you drive or the things you want to get. Like, that's not, you're worth way more than that. Like, what's most important? What's the most important challenge or problem? I mean, there's lots of problems, but what's the most important problem that you're uniquely positioned or you're uniquely wired to solve or to address or to be a part of solving or addressing? And you need to get real about what that is. And it might be something that's out there in the world that God's leading you toward to do something extraordinary, or it might be something in your own personal life. And you need to get real and be really honest about what's not going well and why it's not going well. It may be something personal inside of you. It may be your physical or your emotional well-being. It could be something relational. It could be in your marriage. You've lost sight. You together have lost sight of where you were headed and what you were trying to build and grow. It could be your family. It could be something in your profession. It could be something that you know, in society or in the world, maybe in the world of philanthropy that you feel like you need to get involved with. But it could just be a habit or an addiction in your life that's wreaking havoc that's keeping you from all that God wants for you. And to clearly define the problem is necessary, because you can't clearly define what could be, the possibility of what could be, unless you know what is. And in order to organize your life or orient your life towards what could be and what should be, to take aim at that and orient your life towards that, you have to understand what's the problem before you can start aiming your life in a direction that's really important. Now, some of you, you've already been aiming at something and you already have something, and maybe you got off course. My question to you would be, how's your focus on that thing? Maybe you, at one point, you had clear direction. Here's the type of person I want to be. I'll just say, some of you, Andy has this famous saying of, you know, become the person you're looking for is looking for. Some of you are single and you're wanting to find that person. How is it going? How's it going focusing on becoming the person that you're looking for is looking for? Instead of just worried about who's that person and measuring everybody up against that, like, how's that going? Whatever you're focused on, is it really what's most important in your life? And if you say it is, could we find evidence of that on your calendar, in your bank account, in your time, in your schedule, your best energies and efforts and energies? Are they being leveraged towards that preferred future that you have, that desire for that vision that you believe that maybe God's even placed in front of you? And how easily are you distracted by other wants in life or others' wants in life? As you scroll and surf by all the opportunities for investing your time and effort and energy. Third question, is your life really in alignment? And some of you are like, that's kind of a weird question, but here's what I mean by this. Are you, as a person, I'm far more concerned with who you are on the inside. Is your mind and your heart and your will in alignment? This is what the scriptures teach, is that our mind, our thoughts, and our beliefs, they guide our emotions and our convictions. Most of us allow our emotions and our angst to inform what we think and believe. But that's not the way you were designed. You were designed for your mind and your beliefs to control your emotions and your convictions, which guide your will and your actions and your decisions. That's how this gets put into practice. A vision gets put into practice. And if you're not in alignment, eventually you'll find yourself aimless and anxious and divided, because you'll be directionless in life. You won't be aiming anything. You won't be focused on anything because your emotions and your and the nice new shiny thing or anything that you think is going to make you feel better today will lead you in another direction. And I'll just say this: if you're a Jesus follower and you're here today and you're thinking, this is a big idea, and I don't have a vision for my life, and this might be something that seems like some big gargantuan ethereal thing. I bet you. I promise you. If you'll just get before the Lord and go, God, give me vision for my life. Why did you create me? What do you want me to aim my life toward? That's a prayer he'll answer. And here's why, because I believe with my whole heart that what the Apostle Paul said is true. And he wrote this. He said, we are God's handiwork. You are God's handiwork. Another translation says, his workmanship. You are the workmanship of God, the handiwork of God, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for you to do, for me to do. God created you on purpose, for a purpose. And he has something specific for you. And like Joshua, he has a vision for your life. Like the people of Israel, he has a preferred future for you. One of my favorite new questions a little over a year ago that came to me. I was reading a book and it was about performance. It was a leadership book, but I felt like God met me. It's actually written by a Christian author. It's not a Christian book, but it's talking about performance and how the difference between low performers and high performers. Some of you know this: low performers are people do it just enough to get by. There's average performers that people want to meet expectations. There's high performers. Those people want to be the best. And this guy was making an argument. There's something better than that. There's something more transcendent than that. And he offers this question. It's not, what do I have to do to be the best? The question is, what am I capable of? I love this question. It's a question that's been driving us as an organization. Because this is the stewardship question. Come on, what are you capable of? You should ask the Lord that. He created you. He designed you. What kind of change could you bring to your world? To your family, to your marriage, to your neighborhood, to your social network, to your organization, to our city, to the world. What kind of change could you bring that would have such an extraordinary impact that it would be worth aiming your life at? Here's what I promise you. It's way more than you think. We've been convinced that we were built for comfort and convenience and pleasure. That's what most people are chasing, right? I'm going to work hard so I can take it easy. I can be comfortable. I can be convenient. I can experience pleasure. That's what everybody's after. But you haven't. That's not what you were created for. Those are the things that make you coast. And coasting leads us to go downhill. You weren't built for that. You were built for challenge and for adventure. And for significance, every good story, every good movie is about that. It's not about people hanging out in the lap of luxury. It's about people doing something extraordinary, and you were designed for that. That didn't get programmed in you. It was hardwired into you. You were created in the image of God. You know what he did? The very first thing we learn about God, Genesis chapter 1, the story was written. The creation story was written not to tell us how the world came into being, but to tell us who was behind it. And the first thing we find out about this God, his spirit, the spirit of God, it was hovering over these dark, chaotic waters, the tohu vavohu. That's the Hebrew term. And what does our God do? He takes chaos and he brings it into order. That's what you were designed to do. Isn't that amazing? You have no idea what you're capable of. Until you aim your life at something significant, something challenging, and it turns into the adventure of a lifetime, an adventure that's worthy of the God you serve and the God who created you. Some of you have discovered this, and you did it unintentionally. The very thing you thought would take you down or take you out, it happened. And not only did you survive it, it's actually brought out the best in you. Just a couple of weeks ago, I met a single mom in our church, and she was telling me how excited she was about Deeper, Wider and all these things we're doing. She's excited to invest in our churches, and she told me this is why. She said, because I have two young boys and they're getting vested in here at this church, and their dad abandoned us. He took off, and I used to be bitter. I'm not mad and bitter anymore because his dad did the same thing to him. And then she looked at me and she said, but it ends with us. It ends with us. It ends with my boys. I have a different future for them. I have a different vision for their lives. They're not going to be like their dad and his dad before him. And I love this church because there's men in this church who are investing in my boys. And I need men to invest in my boys because they need good models to break this cycle. That is something worthy of giving your life to. That is so inspiring to me. What is it for you? There's something that's right in front of you. And it's worthy of your life. And if you ask God, he'll show it to you. So take aim and make sure it's something worthy of God's handiwork in creating you, because that's what you are. You are the workmanship of God. As a group of churches, we've decided that every church doesn't need to be an outward-facing church, but every community needs an outward-facing church, locally, nationally, and globally. It needs at least one outward-facing church that invests in people that are far from God. I don't even know if that's possible, but we've decided that aiming too high is better than aiming too low. And that's true in your life too. So here's my question. What about you? What are you aiming toward? What will you aim toward? May it be worthy of the extraordinary handiwork of God when he fashioned you in his mind and brought you into being on purpose. Let me pray for you. Gotta pray for somebody who's here today and they know it's them. They've been wandering. They've been aimless. They've been anxious. There's something inside of them. It doesn't feel right. They feel divided. And today you're reorienting their life and their mind. You're bringing some things into focus. You've maybe brought up a problem, the most important problem that they've been not wanting to address or not want to focus on or not want to acknowledge. God, I pray you give them courage to stare it in the face. And with you alongside them to realize it's something that as they begin to take steps in the direction of that preferred future that you have for them, that you'll be right there with them and you'll remind them. And when they can't do it, you'll do it for them. You'll guide them through it. God, help us to dream dreams that are worthy of the work you did when you created us, to have visions that are worthy of destinations that you have in mind for us. I pray you give us clarity. You give us courage to just begin like Joshua did when he said in 3 days, we're gonna head down to that river and we're gonna cross the river. Give us courage to take those first few steps in that direction. Build momentum and energy towards that preferred future. And I pray you begin to do something brand new in people's lives today as a part of it. I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.